This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker in the sweltering heat of the occupied states of the western mountain states of America. Hi, Phil. This is Michael Dean. How you doing, Phil? Warmeth?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah? What's your temp there? What's your ambient temp?
Last time I checked, it was over 90.
Yeah?
Yeah, it felt worse because I was out mowing the lawn.
That's crazy, man. Why don't you do that in the evening?
Got stuff to do, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You got places to be and people to be and things to do and people to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 98 here today. It's 96 now, but it was 98 earlier. So I'm like sitting here with the fan on and the AC on. And anyway, enough about my technical problems. What's new, man? You used to live in Seattle, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
5 beers.
5 beers in Seattle.
Well, probably more than that, but yeah.
How many dead bodies did you find in Seattle?
Oh, no, we're not talking about that again.
Still. God. It's the last 3 shows. Well, you worked as a building manager in a junky hotel. What kind of neighborhood? What neighborhood was that in?
Well, there was no neighborhood, actually. That was the weird part of it. It used to be an old resident hotel, and at the time, it was in a neighborhood, but then they built the Washington State Convention Center over the freeway, which totally knocked out that whole neighborhood. So there were only 2 buildings on the street that I lived in, and both of them were sketchy. So, and it was interesting too because that building had such a reputation. There would be people that would come up from out of state and just crash in the halls and crash in the, well, in the interior and the exterior halls. And it was, and the management let them do it. It was like, I caught them like several times. I'm like, what are you guys doing, man? And they're like, well, we always were able to do this before. Like, wow. That's cool.
So it was a crash pad. You were the building manager.
Yeah, they
were
living in closets down in the basement.
At a crash pad. Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. So one of my jobs was to shut the laundry room down at 9 at night and then, do a walkthrough. So I learned how to take corners, man, because the building was set up like a big L, and there were 2 elevators right on the that corner of the L, and if you took the corners too tight, you'd run into trouble.
Trouble meaning people waiting in the dark with a brick or what?
Stuff like that. Just people, you know, all of a sudden you're face to face with somebody shooting up with hypodermic needle or, you know, doing all kinds of illicit things.
They might stab you accidentally or intentionally when you surprise them.
Well, I'll give you a good example. It was after New Year's Eve 1 year and
Hey, you know what though? Hang on. It's always after New Year's Eve.
You know what? You're right.
Okay. But it was shortly after?
It was after a particular New Year's Eve. I don't know the year. Doesn't matter. The next morning I got a call from a tenant. And he said, some guy just, did I tell this story about the guy that ran into the bathroom and shut the door and turned on the water and all that stuff?
No. Go ahead. Okay.
Yeah, so this is a weird one. So every time I'd go into an apartment to renovate it, like I always had to beef up the doors because at one point or another, just about all the doors had been kicked in either by the police or the fire department or whatever. So that was one of my big things. I always made sure people had a peephole and I always made sure that they had a safety chain, right?
Peephole for the people.
Peephole for the bad people.
Yeah. to keep out so they can see if the worst people are coming to get them.
Right. Or their friends that they didn't want to see. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But so I would tell people, make sure never open your door without checking to see who's there, number one. And number two, always have the chain on, right? Because I got sick of having to replace them because people would push their way through and stuff. So anyway, so one guy calls me and says, yeah, this guy knocked on his door. He didn't look through the people, didn't have his chain on. The guy pushed him aside, ran into his bathroom, locked the door, and turned on all the water. And I'm like, great, right? Because I know I'm going to have to clean all that up. And water damage was always the worst.
Yeah.
Because random pipes would burst because they were 70 years old at the time. So sometimes they would leak straight down in the apartment below. Sometimes they ping pong down the plumbing shaft and show up like 4 floors down. So in the middle of the night, I'm pounding on people's doors trying to chase this down, and it does do a lot of damage. So anyway, I get in there and I'm pounding on the door, and I could hear the water running. Like the guy had the sink running and the bathtub running, and I'm like, what is this person doing? So I can't talk him out. I told the tenant, I said, call the cops. because obviously this isn't going to go away. And I'm thinking to myself,
just keep
okay,
going.
No problem.
So darn it.
I can't talk to myself. So darn it. I knew that if I had to force my way in, I'd end up being the one that had to repair the door. And I just got kind of tired of fixing doors all the time. But I knew the water was just gushing, man. It was on the floor. It was coming underneath the door. So I kicked the door in. I grabbed a empty champagne bottle because they're pretty beefy, you know. And this guy, man, was wrecked completely. I've never seen anyone so messed up on drugs or whatever before. And he had taken the toilet tank lid off, and he emptied the guy's medicine cabinet, and he just put everything in the toilet tank. And I think he was trying to flush stuff down the toilet, but he put it in the tank for some reason.
Was it his apartment or someone else's?
No, it was just this random stranger.
So was the stuff he was trying to flush the wrong way his drugs or the drugs from the apartment?
It was the tenants. I didn't even understand what was going on.
Well, meth is a hell of a drug is what was going on.
Man, so...
Probably.
I got him out of there, right? And I knew the police were on the way because they kind of knew... We had a good relationship with him there because we were calling him all the time. And so the next thing, I'm walking him down. I got the water shut off. That was my main concern. The tenant was safe. So I'm kind of walking a couple steps behind this guy, and he starts turning doorknobs, right? And I'm like, what is this guy doing, man? And and once again, he turns a doorknob. It was open, and he walks in, and he runs into the bathroom again and starts doing the same thing. But this time, luckily, the apartment was empty.
Wow.
So anyway, in the meantime.
Wait, the first time?
Yes.
You mean empty of people or empty of things?
Yeah, it was an empty apartment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There were no people in the apartment the first one he ran
There were
into,
no people right? in. Right.
Just so, people that have nothing worth stealing so they don't bother to lock their door or what?
This is the thing, man. I would tell them all the time, lock your door. Don't let anyone in. But no, they didn't do it. So anyway, it was a common thing. So I know I have a door to fix. I know that I got to chase down that leak because it had been going on for quite a while. But I knew the guy was in the bathroom. He started doing the same thing again. So luckily, in the meantime, the police got there. And of course, they were really sensitive to needle sticks. They always had leather gloves on. And that was the first thing that they would always ask people is, do you have any sharps on you? The guy couldn't even verbalize. He was just... gone. So they start going through his pockets, and sure enough, man, he had all kinds of stuff in his pockets. But as soon as they found a needle, he was down on the ground, and they were not worrying too much about his personal welfare at that point. But that kind of stuff happened all the time. So you never knew what you were going to run into. I used to have to tow people. That was always good.
Tow?
Because we had a small parking lot in the back, and parking, like in any cities, at a premium, right? And
yeah.
So people paid a lot of money for a space. And
hey, Saturday back off the mic about an inch. You're getting a lot of pop, 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 pop. Thanks, man.
How's that?
Yeah, it's better.
So, yeah, I get a complaint. Yeah. Come home. So, in the meantime, if somebody was parked in a tenant's place, the tenant that came home would park in someone else's place. So, it was a domino effect, right? So my thing was I'll try to find the party that's going on in the building and give people a chance to just move their vehicle, right? So sometimes I would get lucky and I could do it, sometimes not. So if not, the management of the building gave us these really horrible stickers, these big bright yellow stickers that you really couldn't scrape off, man. I don't even know how people got them off. So that really ticked me off, right?
Yes. And tick, tick, tick.
So you never really knew what you were going to run into. So getting back to the idea of like taking corners and stuff, like I learned, like, you know, you take the corners wide because you just don't want to come face to face with any kind of trouble, right? And my only protection at the time was a cordless phone that really didn't. I mean, that was back in the 90s. So,
to beat somebody with.
Know, I probably had to. I think the antenna was about 3 feet long and stuff, but. Yeah, it was always interesting. You never knew what you... But I was happy to be in that building because before they were sending me all over the city, and I didn't know the city at the time, so, and I didn't drive. So I'm walking through these neighborhoods and realizing I shouldn't be there, and nobody warned me. And
yeah.
Never dull. That's for sure.
Was that... what neighborhood was that? Oh, you said there was no neighborhood, right?
Well, it was the they had me going all over the city first before I was assigned to that building. So I never knew where I was going. They would just tell me. Sometimes they'd be nice and drop me off, but a lot of times they'd just send me off in the right direction and hope I got there and got back.
Do you know Capitol Hill area?
Yeah, that's where we were.
Yeah. Do you remember? Were you there in 1993?
Yep.
Do you remember when that woman, that singer in that punk band, Mia Zapata was her name, got murdered, and it was a big to-do. Like, it was actually international news, but you remember that?
I actually don't remember that.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. Something's international news in your neighborhood, you don't know what about do it. Know? That's not disrespectful to you. It's just like, you have your head down working on stuff, you know, right. Your whole life, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was...
I mean, wow. Yeah, tell me the story.
I'm surprised you didn't see it. I'm sure it was like on the front page of the paper there for weeks. And you know, singer Mia Zapata in this punk band called the Gits, G-I-T-S, which I think the Git is like British slang for a bad person, isn't it? No, that Git.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Curse Sir Walter Raleigh. He was such a stupid Git. Isn't that the line in the Beatles song?
I don't know.
Yeah, but... They were, I don't know her well. I met her. We opened for them probably about 6 months before she died. My band Bomb, not really opened for them. It was a co-lead bill. Like if we had played in Seattle, we definitely would have opened. They would have been huge on the poster. We would have been tiny. This was like they were playing in our territory and we were, we put on the show for them because our drummer at the time was friends with them. From Seattle, he spent time. I don't know what it was. He knew him really well, but yeah, we played. I wasn't that impressed. This is heinous to say because everyone like deified. Everyone loved her. She was apparently an adorable person, great person, and she's brutally murdered, raped, strangled, murdered, left in an alley. And yeah, I mean, it was like everybody in music in Seattle and in the world, like. They got written up in Rolling Stone because she got murdered. Like no one had heard of them outside not many people heard them outside of Seattle, but you know, they were underground famous, but you know, everyone just rallied around it. And it's probably uncool for me to say I was not impressed by the band, but everybody basically said she was just amazing and an amazing stage presence. And I just kind of thought, well, she can kind of sing. A lot of singers can't. And yeah, but I couldn't hum a song. But they were nice people. You know, I don't like...
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's okay she died because I didn't like her band. But she was 27. You know about the 27 Club?
Really, yeah.
Yeah.
That's bad.
Yeah, but it was unsolved for a long time. And it was, you know, it was really shocking to a lot of people. I think when there's scenes like the music scene in Seattle at the time in a big city, people kind of forget they're in a big city and it kind of feels like they're in a small town. You know, and I think this reminded everyone that they were not in a small neighborhood where they knew everyone, you know.
And that's kind of how Seattle's set up, like these little districts all connected to each other. So I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah. My wife and I, we used to go bike riding picnicking and stuff at this really nice park and. It turned out to be where the Green River Killer was doing all his bad stuff. Yeah. But I think that was way before we were ever there. But
yeah, actually the first one of the first bands that was considered grunge, there's two actually. It's Tad, my friend Tad. Tad's a great guy. I like Tad. I introduced him to his wife. I set them up on a blind date because I thought they'd like each other. Yeah. But the other they were from Idaho. And then there was this other band called the Melvins. They were from, they came from somewhere to Seattle. I can't remember where. Maybe Idaho. But then there was this other band called Green River. And like, you know, one by one, that band merged over a period of like 10 years into Pearl Jam. It's a long, long, strange trip. But yeah, Green River, after the Green River Killer. But Mia's death was unsolved for 20 years and then it was solved. Wow. How bizarre. That's rare, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yep.
Was it a DNA thing?
Or? It was a DNA thing. Yeah, there was DNA. I mean, in 93, DNA wasn't that solid, and there weren't that many databases connected to each other, and, you know, the technology wasn't that great. And basically, they, you know, put some DNA from her body that was not hers in cold storage. And when the, you know, in 2002, when when the technology was good enough, they started running it. And finally, this guy popped up in 2003 who had a history. This guy named Jesus Menziqua, M-E-Z-Q-U-I-A. And he had a history of domestic abuse, burglary, assault, and battery. All his ex-girlfriends and his wife had filed reports against him, a report of indecent exposure, but there was no link between them. Like, he just grabbed her off the street, probably. Huh. But it's a bad man. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we used to get notifications all the, like once a week of, like, offenders in the neighborhood. And, like, it was pretty regular.
Yeah. In the aftermath of her murder, friends created a self-defense group called Home Alive. They organized benefit concerts, released albums with the participation of Seattle's music elite, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, Heart, the Presidents of the United States of America. Joan Jett also recorded an album with the surviving members of the Gits called Evil Stig, which is Gits Live backwards. Uh-huh. The Home Alive group... Did I say Home Alone? Home Alive group instructors offered a range of courses from anger management to the use of pepper spray in the martial arts. No guns, obviously, but, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to make this about she should have had a gun. She should have had a gun, but I'm not going to make this about that. It sometimes it doesn't help, you know, if someone comes up behind you and hits you in the head with a brick.
Could be used against you. You never know.
Well, I'm happier carrying a gun and taking the chance it'll be taken away and used against me than I am not carrying a gun.
Did I ever tell you the time I pepper sprayed myself?
No. Did I ever tell you the time I accidentally called the police on myself about 30 years ago?
No. Tell me about it.
No, I don't want to go there. There were, I was not in my usual mind, and I was,
yeah.
I panicked myself. Yeah. They just looked at me and went like, okay, later. Back, you know, now they beat you up and then throw you in jail if you call the cyclops on yourself, but no.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agrist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agoristhosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime? Or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agorist Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agoristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agoristhosting.com.
What? You tell me.
So it goes back to the building we lived in.
Again. Of course.
My wife was working at a place on Aurora Avenue in a kind of really sketchy commercial area. And so she got some pepper spray, and it came like in a package of two. So she had one with her all the time, and I had one. I just kind of forgot about it. I tossed it in this little closet that every apartment had. And originally the closet was designed so that you could leave your shoes to be shined, or you could get the morning paper through there were two doors, one in the hallway.
Back when people with jobs worked there instead of people trying to kill themselves.
It was actually
slowly.
Kind of a cool thing. So I got in the habit. I would be so grungy when I came home, I'd just take my boots off and throw them in there, right? And at the time, this is a studio apartment, and we had six cats, and I just nonchalantly tossed my boots in, and it somehow hit the pepper spray canister, and it just sprayed me right in the face and just kept spraying me, and it wasn't stopping, and I couldn't even breathe, and I'm like, what? This isn't even happening, right? My cats are freaking out, running all over the place. In the meantime, I hear my wife turning the key to get in the door, so she didn't even know what was going on. All I could do was like, kind of physically throw her in the bathroom and shut the door, and the spray is like filling up our apartment. It wouldn't take much anyway, but
wow,
oh man, that was interesting. So yeah, my,
That's why you think that guns might get used against you, because you had a weapon accidentally used against you.
Yeah, I used it against myself. Yeah.
But you're not against the carrying of firearms.
No.
No.
No, not at all.
It's all good.
In Maine, it's they recently made it legal. And I carried in Washington just because once I figured out what my job really was, I figured,
Well, and what about Maine? Oh, yeah, they made it legal to carry without a permit, right? Concealed? Yeah. It's called constitutional carry. Speaking of weird things of the government, did you see that? I don't love Trump, but he does some good things once in a while. He just pardoned the ranchers. Do you hear about this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Those ranchers.
I didn't hear that he pardoned
Bundy Ranch people. Yeah, he pardoned them. Huh. Yeah. Like, these were people that, like, the Obama administration wanted to, like, you know, lock up and throw away the key. And basically, they were doing a controlled burn on their land. The grass fire spread to land that was owned by the government that butted up against their land. The government charged them with arson just because there's a lot of, like, trying to throw ranchers off their land because they can make more money, like, selling the land to the Chinese for solar panel farms or something or all sorts of other uses. But they went after these guys for no reason and tried to basically, like, ruin their lives and, you know, take their farm, take grandpa's farm. And a bunch of people came out and, like, had a armed standoff with the federal government. Like, nobody was shot, but the government was, like, going to take their land. And about 100 people showed up from all around the country with rifles, and the government just went away. And I was like, I said on this show, you know, it's not over. They're not going to let it just be over. And I was right. They took him to court and tried to ruin him in court. And to protest that, a bunch of people took over this wildlife preserve. A bunch of armed people took over a wildlife preserve in Oregon in the bitter cold, like with no electricity, you know, just like camping in buildings, and were arrested. And those people were tried. And it was just a really bad black eye on government overreach, which is good. But then there was still the criminal record with the, Trump just pardoned them. It's bizarre to me. I think he's probably trying to get votes in the upcoming midterm elections for other Republicans. You know, I don't know. It's out of character. I mean, he actually said something last month about maybe decriminalizing marijuana federally, too, which was really bizarre because his attorney general was very, you know, round him up and shoot him, even against medical marijuana. So I don't know. Strange days.
Strange days indeed.
Strange days. Yep. And speaking of strange days, when I'm having a strange day, I always reach for my phone and use Cell 411 to call someone who cares. Cell 411 is a great app that you could use to call somebody other than people who will show up and beat your dog and arrest you. You can call friends with it. You can push a button and have predetermined friends immediately know where you are, what your problem is, and have turn-by-turn directions to them. That's Cell 411. Get it free for Google Play for your Android phone. For your Android phone or on the iPhone Tunes store. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Speaking of strange, what did you think of that picture of the main shopping list I sent you the other day? Did you get that?
Yeah, man. The main shopping list. It was like you sent me this picture. Maybe I'll use it for the show picture. It was a piece of wood with a shopping list written on it that someone had shopped and then tossed it where, in the parking lot of Walmart?
Yeah, the Walmart parking lot. It's the Cedar Shake shingle.
It's kind of beautiful. It's kind of like my comment was, this doesn't even seem like littering because it's so nice.
Oh, it wasn't. It was found art to me.
That's what I was thinking. I just outsider art. That's what our group, that's what Biptunia is. We're outsider art, I think.
So I'm reading down through it now, and I kind of figured out what it was all about because it was a pretty...
Well, it looks like a construction house construction project, but it's also got a kiddie pool. Maybe they're making moonshine.
What it is, from what I can gather, is it's a list of things they need to do to repair their camp.
Mm.
So having a camp is like a main thing. Everyone, no matter...
Maine, the state.
Yeah, Maine state. Like, no matter how, you know, rich or poor you are, everyone has a camp. And the camp is where anything goes.
You mean own a camp? Like yeah, own like some land up somewhere, out in the sticks?
Somewhere out in the way out.
Do you?
Way out. No.
Why? Everyone does. You, everyone's doing it.
Our house is a camp. Our house is a camp.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can see, you know, the normal stuff like, you know, pipe for the fence and tackle boxes and ice with three exclamation marks and the grill, the kiddie pool, and then it says it's a rental. So I see, like, it says rental 127 Pig Hill. So they must be renting this camp or fixing it up. I don't know. But it's always interesting.
I liked
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I love stuff like that.
Yeah.
You never know what you're going to find. The coolest thing is, like, the Walmart parking lot for weird campers.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, they let them because they let them.
Yeah, they do.
Well, is your Walmart connected to a Sam's Club or whatever the other thing is that Walmart owns?
It's just its own entity and a big empty space around it so people can really...
So Sam's Club is or Walmart is?
The Walmart, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there. But you don't have a Sam's Club there?
Mm-mm.
Because Sam's Club, I know, allows that in some places or a lot of places. And it's owned by Walmart. It's like the, you know, Sam's Club, you go buy things by the pallet, you know, instead right. of by the yeah. box. And, it, you know, it's like you pay $50 a year or something to get a discount. And it's really worth right. it, especially for people that have like 12 kids or run a school right. or a daycare or whatever, you know, buying in bulk. But they also a lot of people that, you know, travel the land, walk the land mm-hmm. on their in their RVs. A lot of retired people. And
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can't live there for a year, but you could park there overnight. They're fine with it.
Yeah. Yeah, there was one thing. It was so cool. I took a picture of it. It was an old school bus, you know, kind of like the old hippie school
old bus. Old school bus. Old school bus.
Old school school bus, yeah.
Yeah.
But there was a hippie old Volkswagen bus, like, you know, Scooby-Doo bus, like welded on top of it.
Oh, I've
it
seen that. So bizarre. That's a thing. Yeah, that's a bizarre. Thing, man. Yeah.
It's a thing? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah.
It was a thing in the 60s.
It was just cool, man.
Further.
Oh, the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile was there.
Is there only one? Or was it one?
Well,
of
I don't
them?
Know, man. This thing was prime. I'm telling you. It was. Got a picture of that. Yeah. So I was, you know, it's great that they have these things we can carry around now that tell us what time it is and they can take pictures and videos. And tell
it's us, it's bizarre, tell man.
It's 95 degrees out.
When was the first time you used a computer? I mean, I've known you since college and we're in our 50s now. Do you remember?
I can tell you the exact day. Well, not day, but year. It was about 1993, actually. I took 2 weeks off from work. I had to rent a computer at the time because we didn't have one. That's when I was going to write my big novel. So for 2 weeks, I sat staring at this computer, and I don't even know if I typed anything on it. Man. But yeah, so it
so
was
you
such
were gonna
a
write
freaking...
you were gonna write it in a weekend. You rented it for a weekend?
No, 2 weeks. Oh. I gave myself 2 weeks.
How much was it to rent a computer? You could probably buy one for whatever that cost.
It was pretty expensive, and I wasn't getting paid for the time that I took off. So
yeah.
Yeah, it kind of was counterproductive.
I had in 93, the first time I used a computer sort of was in like 75, and it was like a mainframe computer at a university where my sister was. Did I tell you that story about getting locked in the internet, getting blocked on the internet back in 75? Well,
was
it was
that when there were more than one back then.
More one internets. Well, it was before the World Wide Web. It was like part of the ARPANET, and it was 74. I was 10, and I was at what's the Ivy League school in New Hampshire? Anyway, that one. Yeah, my sister was Princeton, going there, and I was visiting her there, and she dropped me off for like a half hour or like an hour maybe. I was really fascinated. Like, oh, there's a computer lab. Oh, take me there. And it was, you know, it was a room with about 20 tables with little computer monitors at them, but they weren't computers. They were connected to a computer in the other room, like took up the whole room. Mm-hmm. And, you know, computers were hard to use back then. But some friend of hers like sat me down and showed me how to like play tic-tac-toe, and I was doing that. And then I got really excited, and I was asking everyone questions, and I was bugging them. And they locked me in the bathroom, man.
What?
And I didn't realize that until about a month ago. Because I went to use the bathroom. It was like right off that room. And I was, you know, I went to come out of that room, and the door was locked. And I'm like, that, you know, how'd that happen? I didn't do that. And, you know, I pounded for 5 or 10 minutes, and they finally let me out. You know, that's a long time for a little kid. It might have been a minute and a half for what I know.
Well,
but
it seemed that long.
Yeah, so I got blocked on the internet. You know, people get blocked on the internet all the time now, but I got blocked on the internet in 1975. But it didn't sour me on it. I still was fascinated with computers and with synthesizers. Like, my dad and I tried to build a synthesizer in 76, 77. Like, we got a kit and tried to solder it together, right. And neither of us were good enough at soldering. I could solder now, although I can't really solder now because the rosin is bad for my lungs and I have lung problems. Bad. And it's like components are getting so tiny that my eyes, even with glasses, like and like a little magnifying glass and the little alligator clips, like still can't really see it. So I have a buddy that puts things together for me when I want them. But I actually started making software synthesizers this week, and I made buddy of mine and I made a really cool one called Lucky Worm. Did you hear the Lucky Worm examples soundtrack I sent?
No, man, I didn't.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I was thinking maybe the next record would be called the Lucky Worm Project, and it would be like all done with just this synthesizer and us and a microphone, you know.
I'm up for that. How about the Lucky Worm Farm?
Maybe. I don't know if I want to limit myself that much, but it's like it's a free thing I'm giving away that like runs on any computer and you can play synthesizer with it. And it sounds, you know, like an old Moog. It's called Lucky Worm.
Oh, nice.
Because it's the first preset I set up it sounds like Lucky Man, you know, the Emerson, Lake and Palmer song. Mm-hmm. I kind of tried to imitate that and then just went off there and made a bunch of other presets. But it's pretty cool. If people want to grab it, they can grab it free if they have things to run a VST on. It's a 32-bit VST. It's free. It's covered by the BIPCOT, no government license. You can get it by going to BIPTUNIA. What is it? BIPTUNIA? Are we .org or .com? What are we running these days?
I always get confused, man.
Let me look it up. BIPTUNIA.com. Go to the link at the top over near the top right of that yellow bar that says VSTs, and then that goes to my page for in the future I'm gonna do more VSTs, but there's one that says my free VST synth Lucky Worm, and you click on that and you go to it, and it's beautiful, man. I've worked about 18 hours a day on it for about 4 days, and it's really good now. It's in version 0.40 already.
Wow.
And it's like all of the things that would normally be called things like echo, filter, etc., are called worm things. Like, you know, the oscillators are called worm food and worm poo. The tune is called worm hole depth. The portamento is called portobello. The volume is number of worms. Yeah, I love it. And it's got a picture of worm on it. Yeah, it's great, man.
Cool.
Yeah. You got to get that?
Nope.
Okay. It's busy there at Intergalactic Prairie Studio East, huh?
The switchboard let that one slip.
We're taking calls. Yeah, we're not taking calls today. All right.
No, not today, man. Yeah. We may in the future. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're going to go.
Those guys are pretty good.
You're going to go see where our stomping grounds grew up, huh? Soon.
Yeah. Every time I go back, there's less and less.
Less and less what? Worth stomping?
Of what was there. I mean, literally, like...
We took it with us.
Well, yeah, we took a little bit of it with us, and kind of last forever with the stuff we've written and sung and made music about.
I mean, we made it what it is. We made Chautauqua County what it is. We made Jamestown what it is. I mean, what else is it known for? Okay, so like Lucille Ball was from there. Then the 10,000 Maniacs were from there. And then we were from there. That's it. That's all that's all it's ever come out of there.
And we survived.
Yeah, you know? 10,000 Maniacs
didn't. That's the thing. You know, for me, it was like, and it was the same for you. We were living in that place as pedestrians, man. So we had the pedestrian view.
You mean literally pedestrians, like not in cars, or you mean being like serfs?
No, I mean like, well, both actually.
Yeah, I used to hitchhike everywhere when I was a teenager.
Yeah, that always
all around
made
the county.
Me nervous, man.
That you did that.
I did that a little bit.
Yeah.
Last time I did it, it wasn't good, so I didn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it wasn't good. Yeah.
No.
Well,
it wasn't
now
good.
You get murdered. You know.
Well, here's what happened. We were out late at night at a club or something, and my friends disappeared, and I was like really late, maybe two, and I was like about 10 miles away from home. So what are you gonna do, right? Had no money, so I'm hitching. Of course, no one wants to pick anybody up that time of night. You know? And this car finally pulled over. I think I walked about halfway home, and it was a couple, and it looked like they were living out of the vehicle because there was all this dirty clothes and like food wrappers and stuff.
Yeah.
They told me to get in, so I got in, And at every time they stopped, like at a stoplight or a stop sign, they started fighting, right? Physically fighting with each other, right? And I'm really uncomfortable. I'm sitting on all this pile of junk. And I'm like, what is this? And I was sitting on a rifle, man. So I got out of there, needless to say. Like I said, you can just pull over and let me out. I was ready to jump if I had to. So that was it for me. I never did it again. And if karma comes back on me and my vehicle dies on me on the side of the road and I got to walk 20 miles, I'm cool with it. But other than that, yeah, it used to make me nervous because I know I used to hitchhike all the time. From Westfield to Jamestown, that's a good, 20, 25 miles. And then I think you used to hitchhike to Pennsylvania a lot. But hopefully nothing bad ever happened. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, classic Nor'easter. Oh, you know what? You're talking about hitchhiking, though. One time I walked from Chautauqua to Jamestown at night because no one was picking me up hitchhiking.
I almost did that.
Yeah. I just Googled it. It's a 16 walk. And a half miles.
Yeah. Yep. It's a long walk. Wow. It's not a fun walk.
It's not a fun walk, man. Nope.
No. So I don't know. Speaking back home, I don't know if I asked you or not, but you know, is there anything specific you want me to like go revisit besides the squirrel at the Prentice Zone Library?
The Prentice Zone Library. You like that?
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Yeah. I couldn't remember. I always get the Prentergast Library mixed up with the Patterson Library.
Patterson, yeah.
And I think they're both Westfield. I think they're both James. I think it's James Patterson and James
Tiberius Prendergast.
Is it? Yes. Really?
Yeah.
Really? Oh, that you're making that up. That sounds like one of those middle names you just add to things.
Oh, no, I'm making that up.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, I was just like, which one is the Westfield one? And I would have known if I'd thought about it, but I thought it was funny because I was on Pregnazone because there's forest fires in this part of the country right now, and I have trouble breathing. So, I called it the James T. Pregnazone Library.
Yeah, I got a kick out of that.
Yeah, put a squirrel in it. You like that squirrel song, the cut-up thing we did?
Yeah, I did.
Put a squirrel in it?
Man. Yeah. Yeah, that was great. Yeah. That's what we do. And we like what we do.
So you've been out teaching people how to put a squirrel in it, right? Tell me about that.
Absolutely. Today, as a matter of fact, I spent about 2.5 hours working with a group of young people and also adults, probably. Young people range from 11 to 16, 17, and adults older than me. Anyway, me and you, you know. And so I found it, I was experimenting with a different way to do the cut up, kind of a more traditional way, and it involves a shredder. And so I worked on this for a while. I kind of perfected the method. And
explain cut up again for people that haven't listened to every show we've ever done.
Okay. Right, because we talk about it all the time.
Yeah, we do.
So it goes back to actually the surrealist and perhaps the Dadaist
around
the turn of the 20th century. But then it got so weird that even the surrealists couldn't deal with it. They actually kicked one of their members out for
cutting up. Being a cut-up.
The person that gets the most credit for it is William Burroughs, and he kind of branded it. But basically, you take he worked with newspapers, and you cut out random lines and articles and just chop them up and rearrange them and try to make some kind of coherence out of it. But it didn't necessarily have to be like a flow like prose or anything. But I like it because the outcome is unknown to the author, him or herself. So a lot of times you have a preconceived idea of where you want a piece to go. This piece goes where it wants to go. So that's kind of the premise. And then you and a friend created a cut-up generator that you feed. So you would feed, I think you fed your own material into that, and it kind of spun it around and chewed it up and spit it out and all kinds of different varieties and arrangements. And I like it because what happens is there's these happy accidents, right? These happy combinations of words that sometimes they just stand out. It's like that's something that you would ascribe to do yourself, and it kind of just happened. So
we take the result and then edit it a little bit too to make it more. Well, I do it to make it sound more like proper English, even though it's not, or at least like sentence structure. Like I add some connecting, you know, conjunctions and move a few things around. I don't leave it entirely up to chance. And I'm assuming that Burroughs did that, didn't he? And you do that.
Right? Yeah, I totally do it just for coherence. Like I want it to be semi, you know, easy to follow the flow of thought. And you know, Burroughs would claim to be a purist, but I'm sure he.
I'm reading an article right now that says that John Lennon did it, Bob Dylan did it, David Bowie did it, and Kurt Cobain did it. I didn't know any of that.
No, I didn't either.
Yeah,
kind of thought it was Dylan, a lost art.
Dylan makes sense. Dylan sounds like it's cut ups.
It kind of does, doesn't it? Yeah. Maybe that's why you can always tell it's a Dylan song, even if a different artist is singing it.
Yeah, because it doesn't make sense, but it makes perfect sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's what a cut up is, really. But so anyway, it was cool. So I the method that I used was I went to the local dump here and I grabbed a book on gardening, right? Because this is a kid friendly type thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the whole theme of it's called a STEAM camp. It's a summer camp, and it's all about science and integrating art.
STEM or STEAM?
So I thought that was a good book to work with. So,
wait, is it a STEM camp or a STEAM camp?
Well, this is called a STEAM camp, but I think it's STEM with an extra emphasis on art.
So it's science, technology, engineering, art, and mathematics. That's cool.
Right.
That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. The librarian had a great vision. Piloted the program last year, and when I heard about it, I said, hey man, can I be part of that? Because I'll bring a poetry piece to it. So I said, originally we were going to do a haiku thing, but that's kind of been done. And like you said, there's rules, and kids don't like rules. I don't like rules. So we just happened to be doing this cut up thing, and I'm like, well, why not try that out? Let's see what happens. And turns out everybody really enjoyed it. And what I thought was going to be about a 20 minute lesson almost ended up being 2 hours long, and people still kind of wanted to keep doing it, but we had to move on. But it was really interesting watching people's process. That's what I really enjoy, seeing how people, you know, take the, you know, you have like basic guidelines, you know, people need some kind of guidance, and then, you know, but you leave it open enough for them to kind of work in their own mode. And I was really, really amazed. I was really impressed by what was produced. So what we did was each one of us took we had 4 pages from the book that I cut out with a razor blade, put them through the, my cat's just moved my microphone here. Put them through the shredder so that instead of destroying the sentences, it preserves them.
Yeah.
And then we had a black piece of cardstock and a glue stick and some scissors, and that's where we created, that was our palette. So by the end of the 2 hour session, everyone produced something. And so the next step is to kind of piece it together so it's one big long cut up.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that turns out.
Then what do you do?
Well, we're working on creating a publication from all the poetry that's been created via the poetry group that we started 3 years ago. There's a magnetic word wall, magnetic word tile wall, where people constantly are creating poems and leaving them. And so like we're photographing that, and we're going to compile it into a collection of original poetry from patrons of the library.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure, cool.
Yeah.
But nobody had heard of a cut up before. No one in the group today. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
It's common, but it's not. You know, it's not common to the general public, but it's most people that have researched poetry at all or literature have probably heard of them. Maybe. I think. I mean, it's not. They're not obscure and arcane.
Right.
But they're pretty cool. They're not done well often. I really think the key is doing something to them after you throw the I Ching of words, agree. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, for coherence or clarity, or just for the like smooth transitions.
Readability.
Yeah.
Talkability, really, is what it is.
Right. Because we both know how difficult it is to read, even when they are polished a little bit.
Yeah, that was
fun. But I love it. It's a great challenge. I love it to make them sound and smooth enough that, they're not all choppy.
Yeah.
Yep, so that was what I did today. That was one of the things I did today.
How many people showed up?
Let's see.
Doesn't it matter?
No. It was we expected more. I was prepared for 12, and I think 7 or 8 showed up.
With stuff like that, it's sometimes better if they don't, if more don't show up. Because if you have like 20 people at something like that, it's hard to really get anything done. But if you have, 3 to 10, you can really teach people stuff, work with them.
And they were engaged right from the beginning. Like it was cool. I love it when that happens.
Yeah.
But and the first thing I asked was what were people's experiences with poetry, and the kids, the younger people in the crowd said they had none. no experience, good or bad. Tells me something right there.
It used to be that they taught in public school, they used to teach people life skills. They used to teach you at least up until probably about 1965 or 70, I think most high school grads could read, write, balance a checkbook.
Put together a grill, looking at the manual.
A grill, do stuff. And then I think from about the time, we started finishing high school, or a little earlier, I graduated in 82. When did you graduate?
81, yep.
Yeah, I think around that time was when they started stressing the teaching you about feelings, and they kind of put the things of putting the grill together and balancing the checkbook aside, but then they teach you poetry and they teach you literature and stuff. I don't think they teach either now, do they?
Yeah.
Together a grill. A lot of people who go to public school, especially, but even private school, like private college, a lot of them can't do basic life skills. And a lot of them also can't express themselves in writing. All they can do is yell and vote, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah, I ran into that. We did a project. My school took on a project. We were going to rehab this neglected cemetery, and there was all kinds of cool research and stuff that was involved. But when it came down to it, the real work was to go there and clean it all up. It had been all overgrown, and I remember handing this student a rake, and I looked, and she was using it upside down. Like, she wasn't even raking anything with it because she's using teeth were sticking up in the air.
The pole end of it?
No, she, had the... She had it oriented right, but, she wasn't... She didn't know the teeth needed to be facing the ground.
And so I'm she was just petting it, basically.
Yeah, basically.
Petting the ground. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was like, wow. Like, I just assumed,
I'm writing a book very slowly about basic life skills and a lot of stuff. Everything from when you're done with your toothbrush, run your finger on it to get the water off it so it doesn't get stinky sitting there, so it dries out. Things like that to how to navigate the health system as a patient, because I've had a lot of experience in that, to how to record your voice well and not sound horrible, how to form a complete sentence.
Wow.
Yeah, it's called The 4.5 Rules of Life.
Huh. So what's the significance of the title?
Oh, well, there's 4.5 rules of life. Can't remember them. I don't know. It's just a gimmick not a gimmick, but it's really a framework to wrap everything around,
Right.
Because it really is it's just going to be a 250-page list of how to live and little anecdotes and vignettes and examples. But I remember that the half one, there's 4 rules and then the half. This is funny. People are like, you're writing a book and you can't remember what it's about. But I started writing it about a year ago. And when people often say, I'm writing a book slowly, they're like, yeah, we'll never see that. Except I have 10 books out and I've made a living writing and I do know how to write books. And I've just gotten sidetracked with music. I was writing this book. I got those Chromebooks. And then I started playing music a year ago next month. I mean, I've been playing music since I was a kid, but playing again in earnest, where I wake up every day and want to play and record. And we've made 6 records in 11 months. I started last August. August 2017 is when I bought my keyboard, keyboard. Yeah. And started recording and then hooked up with you about a month after that. But some of your lyrics are on the first record. Some of your lyrics made it to the first record. I hooked up with you about 3 months later, because the first record came out 3 months after I started playing and recording again. And
we must have just reconnected.
Like, I think I reconnected with you about a week before the record came out and didn't even have time to like teach you to record and get you to get a mic. Just, I used some of your lyrics without even asking. I just used them and put them in a song.
That's
your poetry.
Cool.
Yeah. And then just sucked you into a vortex to the point where like now we don't even have time to write poetry enough for all the songs I want to do, where we just, this show is going to end up being about 5 songs chopped up.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but, I dig it.
You know, keep it going. I mean,
I will until I don't. But I kind of put that book on the shelf at some point. But I keep adding notes to it. Like I've probably written 50 pages of like 2 and 3 line notes since then. You know,
do you find that it evolves more organically that way?
Yeah, that's all
and
right.
It's not forced.
Yeah.
See, for me, that's how like. My attempt at writing a novel is that same process. I let it go. I have other things going on, but then I kind of gravitate back to it again when I feel like I have something that's worth, you know, contributing to it, and then I walk away from it. So I get that idea of like, you know, you're always writing it, but you're distanced from it.
All right. So I opened it up. Here's the table of contents. I can tell you what the 4.5 rules of life are.
All
so
right. Yeah.
Rule one is, do not initiate or accept aggression.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
And rule two is keep your word. Now do not initiate aggression is the non-aggression principle, which is the basis of libertarianism and voluntarism. But I add the or accept, and that doesn't mean if someone, you know, bumps you on the street to kill them. It means like try to avoid having as much aggression as any aggression that you can. And it sounds like a no-brainer, but people put up with a lot of stuff they don't have to. So,
right.
You know, that's rule one, do not initiate or accept aggression. Rule two, keep your word. Rule three, communicate clearly. And rule four is do everything as if it's the only thing you'll be remembered for. You know, like work, like even if you're working for free for someone, for something no one's ever going to see, like work as if you're getting paid a lot of money and it's the only thing you'll ever do. Because that's how you end up getting paid and end up getting and or getting remembered, is by doing little things well. And then rule 4.5 is don't be a jerk unless you have to.
So do you define what a jerk is?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's a jerk?
It's chapters and chapters. I'm a jerk. I don't know. You're not a jerk, I'd say. You're not a jerk unless the word disco is mentioned. Then you turn into a jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It happens, man.
Yeah. Which is funny.
Dr. Ben.
I can make music that has disco tinges to it. If I don't say disco, you'll love it. Yeah.
I hear it, but I don't say anything about it.
You don't say anything? You don't say anything about those Synair drums going boop, 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 boop in the background?
I know.
Well, it's hard to play electronic music without having a vibe of disco, because they came from the same place, you know. They all come from Kraftwerk. Kraftwerk invented everything, and disco kind of branched off of Kraftwerk. You know when Brian Eno heard the song I Feel Love, you know, the disco song by...
Yeah, yeah.
He said, this is the future of music.
And something similar happened to the Talking Heads when they heard, like, really early hip-hop. That's what they said, you know.
Yeah.
And they're all interconnected, obviously.
Yeah. And then Eno also produced the first Devo record, who are definitely were the future of music in some ways. And their influence is still felt. But.
Sure.
Yeah, but the root of that tree is Kraftwerk. Did you ever listen to Kraftwerk?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I'm not knowledgeable about them, but yeah.
Well, a lot of people know them without knowing the influence they had too. Like they know they did that song "Fan Fan Fan" on the Autobahn, but you know they weren't the first people to make electronic music, but they were the first people to make electronic music that anyone wanted to listen to and that you could dance
accessible.
To. You know,
yeah.
Yeah, and I'm talking like late, you know, early '70s. Not even late 70s, but yeah. And they're still around.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw a documentary about him. It was great.
So a couple things like I wanted to kind of maybe finish up with. But
yeah.
One of them was due diligence. I've been doing a lot of research and a lot of personal sacrifice to myself on kind of our – I think I envision this research manifesting itself in another Kip Cameron cameo appearance on.
What does he think of the stuff we're doing?
Oh man,
I've never even talked to him. He's the guy that, if people don't know, he's your friend that does some voice work on our songs. Like, he's done, I think, one thing on each record you and I have done together of the five records we've done together. And he's like, he has one of those voices, like, in a world where, and it's his real voice, and he's an actor, and he's got a beautiful, really commanding voice. Yeah.
And for years, he was an actor, character actor. And
in Italy, right?
Did some voice work. Yeah, he did Italian soap operas, and he worked.
Is he Italian?
No. Hmm. He's actually from Maine.
Speak Italian?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he does. Okay. And Spanish too.
Yeah, okay.
And maybe Portuguese, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the thing that I don't know why we were talking about this, but it was all about this sci-fi UFO kind of stuff. So I always find that fascinating.
Yeah.
So yes, yeah, so as I said, a great personal sacrifice to myself. I've been watching as many bad B-movie sci-fi flicks as I could. And so coincidentally...
Suffering for your art.
Yes, I do that. And it's research. It's real research. So as a matter of fact, I took my truck in to get in alignment because my wife and I are going to be heading back to New York. And Kip works at the dealership. So I ran into him and... he hadn't even heard the latest song that he did, and that was about kind of the pitfalls of the mental health system as it is now. So I burned it on a CD for him. He doesn't even have a computer. So.
Oh, man, that's great.
So, but at work, I get a message from him, and it's like two thumbs up, and he's like number one. So, like, he really liked it.
Wait, how's he give you a message from work? Calls you on the phone?
No, on a computer. He emails you from work.
Yeah. Okay.
But he doesn't have a computer of his own. I know he can use one at his mom's house, but she lives like a long time away. But anyway, so he was cool. So as the truck was getting worked on, I watched an old B movie, Roger Corman, cheesy sci-fi flick. And so I take notes, right? You know, and these notes are going to basically, this is a video kind of cut up thing that I've done. I haven't really ever done that before, but you know, things like 0 hour approaches, nerve center, automatic, anti-barometric solar wind signaling, normal courses, velocity, gravity, ill effects, bad ignition, cosmic ciphers, chemical elements, Morse code in reverse, propulsion, hyperbolic, lawless slander, you know, stuff like that.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
You know what number stations are?
No, I do not know what that is.
Number stations are radio stations that started broadcasting during World War II in Europe on shortwave, and they're very powerful transmitters, and they transmit 24 hours a day. Some are still transmitting, and it's like, it's just a woman's voice or a man's voice just reading numbers. In English, even if it's from Germany or whatever. And it's, you know, they don't know what it was. They don't know no one knows for sure. I mean, obviously the idea is that it was some code being sent during the war.
Sure.
But it might have just been gibberish to, like, keep the code people busy instead of actually solving codes, you know?
That's cool.
But they're like creepy. That. They're creepy sounding, too. They're, like, very deadpan, usually. If you go on YouTube and search number stations, there's a bunch of videos that have recordings of them, and there's still a few of them out there. It's weird.
So it's amazing. I never knew anything about what Radio Free Europe was, but until I met my friend from Hungary, and wow, what a powerful mode of communication that is.
Is it run by the U.S. government or by someone else? I forget.
I think it was. Yeah,
it still exists. Actually, radio. Let me find it. Radio. I remember seeing ads for it as a kid. It's basically propaganda, like soft propaganda in reverse. Well, yeah. It's not in reverse, but it's radio broadcast illegally into another country.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Radio Free Europe, I think, wasn't even very political. I think they just did like news and mostly music. And the idea was
it
like
was mostly music,
in communist
yeah.
countries, like you weren't even allowed to, you know, there wasn't even music radio. There wasn't like pop right. music. And in Nazi Germany, like, you know, any music that didn't glorify the state was illegal. And, you know, they'd broadcast on the other side of the border with as powerful as they can to override the stations run by the government.
Yeah.
I kind of think that we are Radio Free Europe. The Freedom Fiends is Radio Free Europe. Into square society. I'd like to think of us as that.
I dig it.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Radio, so that's my research. So that was the first thing. And then second thing is I just recently read this article about this thing called meaningful coincidence. And I never had heard of it. It's a concept that actually Carl Jung invented. But so there's a quote here. In reaction to it, it said, the poet John Keats in 1817 accused Isaac Newton of trying to unweave the rainbow, by which he meant that Newton was attempting to take the magic out of life by paring it down to its scientific basis. The young poet might have been wishful in his thinking, but such a statement also raises the question of how we should grapple with mysteries, with or without belief in a greater meaning to life. So the whole article is based on, you know, are coincidences really coincidences, or do they actually have a greater meaning? And this other guy named Bernard Beetman, he's a psychiatrist and author of a best-selling book. He said he believes that meaningful coincidences both exist and can be proven. One story he likes to tell about coincidence is extremely personal. He was 31 years old and living in San Francisco. One night about 11 p.m., he began violently choking over the sink. He hadn't been eating or drinking, and the attack seemed to come out of nowhere. He drank some water, recovered, and went to bed, wondering what had spurred his choking fit. The next morning, he received a call from his brother, who told him that their father had died at 2 in the morning in Connecticut, which, because of the 3-hour time difference, made it the same time when Beetman had begun choking. His father died choking to death on his own blood. Wow. Beetman found this pair of events incredibly significant, but he couldn't find a sufficiently scientific explanation for them other than random chance. So he developed his own explanation, taken in part from Jung's idea of synchronicity. So you see, people struggle with this. So there are all these philosophical schools that believe
predestination or not.
So it's funny that you mentioned that, because that's one of the major points of the article, is that people are, there's two different schools. The one school believes that coincidences are just that, they're coincidences. And then the other school believes that coincidences happen for a reason, and citing examples such as, you know, you could think of it like it's personal between us. So all of a sudden one day, I don't know who reached out to whom, but we reconnected.
I reached out to you because I wanted to, and I know exactly how it happened. But
yeah. All right. Well, yeah.
You know what? I want to believe, but I don't know if I do, and I think it's okay that I don't. If about coincidences being predestination, I feel like the human brain looks for patterns, and I feel like I'm still probably theistic, but I don't even want to like crack the God question on this at all. I think it could be done without even going there.
I don't think it.
And I think that, you know, what is it they say? I think Arthur Clarke said that advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. You know, the science fiction writer said that. And that's pretty much true. I mean, there's stuff in our lifetime that would have been magic when we were a kid. Like you and I, when we were a kid, like even the thought of talking long distance without paying money and having it sound good, like we're doing, in the middle of this, like we just got kicked off and I had to restart Fiendphone and then call you back. And I was kind of mad, like, that's a hassle. But it's like, my gosh, back when we were in college, to call somebody across the country, I mean, this would have cost like $40, man. And this is like during the day.
Yeah.
We would have had to wait until nighttime to do it. Or even if we did it from home, like we get a bill, you know, it'd be like a dollar a minute in that money, which is like $3 a minute now. and we're this is costing us nothing, and the quality is so much higher than a phone call now or even back then.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So yeah, I guess
that's voodoo.
Take that.
So. But,
My thoughts on this, I believe coincidences are coincidences. That's it for me.
Good. I thought you were going to go somewhere spooky and magical with it.
No, that's not.
I had a friend, my girlfriend before my wife, who's a friend of my wife and mine. Lydia was the one. Did I tell you that we had one guest at our wedding?
No.
We got married at the courthouse. We had one guest because you have to bring your own witness when you get married at the courthouse. Right. We got married on short notice. Like, we'd been dating and living together for, dating for a year and living together for 6 months. But one day, I didn't get on my knee and ask her. I just said, hey, we're getting married. And she said, I think we should get married. That was it. Mm-hmm. And she was really, really happy. She wanted to.
Nice.
And we're still happy. But it was like we decided this on like a Monday and got married that Friday. And you have to bring your own witness. Like, you have to have someone to witness it and sign it. And you have to bring your own witness in at least SoCal where we went, Southern California. Yep. And so we brought Lydia, and she's a really good photographer. So she was also the photographer, and I recorded it, and we like, it was voodoo though. Cause like we got married, but the recording's gone and the pictures disappeared. Like, they were lost on the recording didn't work, and the pictures like were lost on a hard drive that failed at some point, but the marriage is still there, and that's what counts. But
That's what counts.
Yeah. But Lydia said, when people would attribute things to grace or to perfection or predestination, she'd say, well, it's chaos and statistics. That was like her explanation of God, or of, I don't even know if God, but of.
Well, I think that negates God. I think it's just chaos and statistics.
God, or that is what people call God. The problem I have with, I'm a deist, which is what Thomas Jefferson was. It means that you believe in a supreme being, but that it created everything and then just kind of wound it up and walked away. It's called the watchmaker analogy, that it doesn't answer prayers. And Thomas Jefferson actually did this thing that was considered heretic by a lot of people. He made this thing, you could buy a copy of it. It's called the Jefferson Bible. He took the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, heard and it. He chopped it up.
He chopped it. He did a cut
he
up.
He cut it up.
With the Bible.
He cut it up.
He took out.
He actually did.
Took out anything supernatural. He took out the miracles. Mm-hmm. He took out the angels. And he just left the words of Jesus, And he made like 4 or 5 copies of this and gave them to really close friends and relatives during his lifetime and said, like, just don't show this to anybody until I'm dead. And one of them survived with some grandson of a friend, and you could buy a copy of it on Amazon. It's pretty bizarre, but that's quite a statement to make in a religious world.
It took him his whole life, right, to do that.
I don't know.
I think so.
I mean, I don't think he got drunk one night and smoked some hemp and did it in one sitting. No, I think it took a while, but yeah, that's kind of interesting.
Well, it all fits in with what we're talking about, the whole idea.
Jefferson, synchronicity. Cut up the Bible. That's the show title. You get us
there
in
you
trouble.
Go. Jefferson was a cut up. Let's just go
Jefferson
with that,
was a cut up. There you go. Yeah. That's great.
Yep.
My cat is rubbing her face on the microphone. That's what that sound
That's
was.
So funny because earlier my cat almost knocked the microphone over.
Yeah.
I guess she wanted to be on the show. I don't know.
Also, another thing that's really changed incredibly in our lifetime, other than everything, is recording technology. Like, the first record I made with a band in 1984, it was a 7-inch record. We pressed 1,000 copies of it. We paid for it ourselves. We paid for the recording time ourselves. Wow, recording time was really limited. Like, we had to rush to do it. The first record I did, I paid for most of it with a construction job. The second record I did, I paid for by being a guinea pig for drugs in a hospital.
Wow.
And the drug I took was called anti-steroids, and I've never heard of it since. So I think it didn't work, and I am short, so maybe it made me not grow. I don't know.
Wow, man. Yeah, I suffered for my art. Well, yeah.
You know, there's this band called Flipper I really like, who are kind of, they're kind of magical, but they're not, I don't know if they're together anymore, but they're not my Flipper anymore if they're together. But back in the day, in the 80s, Flipper were a very assaultive experience. Like their music was kind of overwhelming and loud, and but not fast. It was kind of slow and drudgy and poetic lyrics, and I dig them. But decided they toured in this giant step van, like, you know, a big old milk delivery truck kind of thing that they bought somewhere, and they painted it kind of like ugly psychedelic, and on one side of it it said, "Flipper suffered for their art, now it's your turn."
I like that.
Yeah. Do you want to like stop that. On that?
There's no...
You got anything else after
yeah,
that?
Yeah, sure. That
comment
was great.
On that.
Nah.
Comment on that. We'll call it a day.
I think they believed themselves. Yeah. They believed them.
Yeah.
Wow. That was good. I like that.
Cool, man.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I'm going to go edit this and play some more Lucky Worm synth.
Yeah. 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 I know you sent me a song. I just haven't had a chance to check it out, so I'll check it out now.
It was basically a song that I made to, so when people, you know, they see that there's this free synth, so they don't have to install it to hear it. You know, they can listen to this video. I made a video that's like 2 minutes of me playing the whole song with, except for the drums, it's all Lucky Worm. So it's kind of a demo, but it's playing like four different things. It's playing like the bass and the rhythm and the high parts and the lead and the sprinkles. Huh. Yeah. So
nice.
Well, I'm going to go do that, man. Worms.
All right. Worms.
Hey, I saw your t-shirt from across the room. That's pretty cool.
Thanks. I looked all over for t-shirts with designs and sayings that define my unique taste, and I finally found it.
Who makes them?
Wormshirts.com.
Wormshirts.com?
Yeah, Wormshirts.com.
That's weird. Why'd they call it Wormshirts.com?
Probably because Wormshirts.com is easy to remember. Worm, like the critter that crawls on the ground, and shirts, like what they are, t-shirts.
Wormshirts.com. Cool. Do they make them for women?
Yeah, they have men's, women's, and children's styles, a bunch of colors, and all sizes, and they're quality cotton shirts.
I'll look up wormshirts.com right now on my phone and check it out. Wow, they have lots of designs. I've never seen any shirts like these.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
Hey, let's get out of here. We'll go over to my place and I'll order some shirts on wormshirts.com. Then when they arrive, I'll try them on for you.
Worms!
That's wormshirts.com.